Hello, let's do it again. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with the program that helps you learn and improve your American English skills. At the same time, we tell you about interesting and important things that are happening around the world. Today, we begin with news from the United Nations about peacekeeping in Africa. New studies have just been released. Then, a bit later, some entertainment. We'll travel to the city of Houston, Texas, for a festival that reminds us of the American West and when being a cowboy was a common occupation. Let's get started with part one. Peacekeeping operations are often criticized. In September 2014, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon asked a group to study all of the UN peacekeeping and political missions. Yair Vandelein is head of peace operations research at the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. His organization held meetings in Addis Ababa to discuss African peacekeeping problems and ways to solve them. He wrote a report based on the talks to give to the panel. Kelly Jean Kelly has more.
There are new problems for peacekeeping. One is that criminals and jihadists can easily cross some borders. These are borders that do not have strong security in place. Another problem has to do with equipment. Mr. Vanderlein says, bombs killed many peacekeepers in Mali. The bombs are left in the road or carried by people. To be safe, the peacekeepers need vehicles with strong sides that resist bombs.
If you start to look at all the incidents, then you find that most of those casualties, fatalities, are the result of IEDs that killed people because the vehicles that they were traveling in were not IED-proof. So just making sure that particularly Chadian soldiers travel in Mali with the required armed personnel carriers would already save a lot of lives.
The study found that people in countries where peacekeeping forces are working want them to use force to protect civilians. But the commanders may not always order their troops to use force. They do not want to put their troops in danger. The report says, although the troops have orders, or a mandate, to protect civilians, the politicians in the home country of the UN troops can also give orders to the commanders.
That's why you see in some operations that the operations remain passive, not necessarily because the mandate is passive. No, quite often the mandate of an operation is very robust and says you should intervene and you should protect civilians. Not necessarily because the force commander of the peace operation doesn't want to do it, but quite often because the troop contributor in the end decides that they think it is too dangerous to actually protect the civilians. In practice, they basically have a second line of command, and that's their own capitals. And that is a problem that the UN, they are aware of, and they're trying to find solutions.
Mr. Vanderlein says the UN must be clear about the orders they give to peacekeeping troops. The troops might not have a mandate or order to protect all civilians, or they may not have everything they need to protect all of the civilians in an area. When people expect protection and the troops cannot provide it, the people get angry. This has happened in Mali, South Sudan, and the Eastern Congo. Some who talked with the researchers said the weak borders mean that UN operations should take place in several countries at one time. This creates a question of sovereignty, or the right of a country to control what happens in its borders. Mr. Vanderlein thinks most countries will not agree to peacekeeping operations that cross national borders because they do not want to give up their sovereignty. But, he says, the UN should make plans for peace operations based on cooperation between the United Nations and the African Union and sub-regional organizations. The study found that there are also worries about the cost of peacekeeping. The countries that pay for it are mostly Western, industrialized countries. The countries that provide the troops are middle and low-income states. They often complain about each other. Mr. Vunderlein says, over the last year, payments to low-income countries providing soldiers has increased. This has helped the relationship, but it would also be good if those giving troops contributed money, and those giving money also sent troops. This exchange might help them understand each other better. There are 16 peace operations with 120,000 UN personnel around the world. 9 of them, with about 81,000 personnel members, are in sub-Saharan Africa. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. The Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo is the largest event of its kind in the world. The yearly event features horse and bull riders from all over the huge state of Texas. The trail rides are part of a tradition that remains strong while the city of Houston keeps expanding. Every year, the Houston rodeo season begins with a parade downtown. The riders travel highways and city streets to get there. Tim Bernadol, one of the riders, came in with a group from a rural area north of the city.
It's getting harder every year for us just to find stops, to be able to stop safely and be safely on the side of the roads, to have our brakes stop.
The riders don't sleep on the cold, hard ground the way old-time cowboys did. James Money is a rancher from Booth, Texas, about 45 kilometers away. He slept in a comfortable camp trailer every night of the ride to Houston.
I don't know if we're as hard as the old-timers. You know, we have to have luxury to be able to do it.
The day before the parade, riders make their last camp in Houston's Memorial Park. Here they can relax and practice their cowboy skills.
So congratulations on an outstanding trail ride.
There is also an award ceremony. Karula Palwitz is a visitor from Germany. She gets to see some of the riders during the ceremony.
It's very nice to see a little bit of the culture here and get a little bit of the mood here of Texas.
The big winner at the award ceremony was the Texas Independence Trail Ride from Brazoria, Texas. Joey Bolaños is among the proud winners.
It's like the best of the best. Organization, the horsemanship, and safety and all that.
Ed Coas, another of the ranchers, says tradition is the most important part of the trail ride.
It's part of my heritage. My daddy was a rancher and farmer. His daddy was a rancher and farmer. We all were at one time in this Houston area. So we got to keep this going.
Most trail riders are not ranchers. However, they have to take care of their animals throughout the year. 10-year-old Caven says he does that work at home, although his little sisters disagree.
He don't ride his horses at home. He don't do hardly nothing at home with his horses.
I do.
The Barn Bunch riders even bring along their own specially designed fire barrel for the cold nights. Daphne Johnson is the team leader. She says the week-long ride can be tiring.
By Wednesday, everybody's saying, oh my gosh, I can't wait until this is over. By the time we get to the park, we're saying, oh no, the trail is almost over. And then on Sunday, we're planning for next year.
Daphne Johnson says she enjoys spending time every year with others who enjoy a taste of cowboy life. Time for us to ride off into the sunset. Thanks for listening. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington, and this is VOA.